This internet radio show or podcast is number 141 in the series for Franklin Matters. This recording is of the school committee meeting held on Thursday, March 22, 2018. The meeting was a reschedule for the meeting March 13 that was canceled due to the blizzard. Due to the reschedule, Franklin TV was not broadcasting the meeting, so the audio recording here is made available for the community. The meeting itself runs an hour and 40 minutes. My notes captured live during the meeting can be found on franklinmatters.org. So without further ado, here is the audio recording.
I call to order the March 22nd meeting of the Franklin School Committee. This is actually a rescheduled meeting that was scheduled for the 13th, but you know, we have the blizzard. So that's yes. So as is customary, we begin each meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance. And it is my great honor today to introduce Brendan O'Leary, who's going to be leading us. I want to just give you a little bit of background. He's going to lead us in the pledge. A little background about Brendan, provided by Ms. Winkoff. She just, as soon as she said, "Where do you meet this kid?" She said, "He is." She was just like, so anyway, let me just say what she said. Brendan consistently demonstrates kindness, compassion, and humility in class and in the hallways. He easily works with any group in class, making great contributions and eliciting responses from his peers. He does well academically, but never brags to his peers. Brendan, he was nominated for and received the Inclusive Student of the Month by his peers once again. He is very strong academically and a quiet leader who leads by example. He is focused on task, asks meaningful questions, and is often smiling as he interacts with teachers and his peers. He is a role model to other students and has a contagious, positive attitude. He is currently a member of our school student council and is just starting to discover his leadership capabilities. We're really very proud of you. You're a wonderful reflection on your family, your school, and we invite you to please lead us in the pledge tonight. Thanks, Brendan.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Just a reminder, we are being recorded by Steve Shirley for Franklin Matters, but we are not on air tonight because it's a different night than. Apparently we're not on air, so we can relax. And as customary, we also begin with a moment of silence. Thank you. Alrighty. Review of agenda. Does it look okay to everybody? Alrighty. And at this time,
Bergen, I think you and I had spoken about at the end of the agenda. We don't have
any right, executive right. Session. So I did mention it. So we do not need to leave for executive session. Even though it is on the agenda, we don't have to. We do not need it for this evening. So cross that up.
Thank you.
And citizens' comments. If there's anyone here who would like to address anything that is not on the agenda tonight. And now we'd like to hear from our Franklin High School student representatives.
Thank you. So at the end of the winter season, we just want to highlight what an amazing job and all the successes all of our winter sports teams did. So our winter sports team got first in 11 tournaments or meets. We had 5 hawk champs, 3 sectional champs, and our cheer team became the state champions. And then last Saturday, our boys basketball team competed in the state champions. And although they unfortunately had a tough loss, they all played their hearts out. I cannot be more proud of them. Mm-hmm. And then also many individual athletes were named either Hawk All-Star and some even named Hawk MVPs. And then also we want to give a big shout out to Randall City, our amazing student fan base, and who showed so much support for all of our athletes and all this winter, and up in other towns to shame in their representation of their schools.
That's true.
Now tryouts and spring sports have started up this past Monday, and hopefully our spring season will be as dominant as our winter season.
Banquet season has also started at the high school. Freshman banquet was held a few weeks ago, and our senior banquet will be held next Thursday at Lake Pearl. And also Science NHS recently held their annual Science Night, and it's where middle and elementary school students can come with their families, and it's open to the community as well. And we highlight different science programs at our school with many activities that the kids can do.
And then also Wednesday the 14th, many students at Franklin High School participated in the nationwide walkout for the victims of the Parkland shooting. And administration worked with students to make sure people who wanted to walk out had that voice and that chance to walk out. People who didn't also have that opportunity. There are over 1,000 students who walked out.
Peace Takes Practice was held a few weeks ago, our conference that our Peer Leaders Club put on, and over 100 students were able to attend, and it was held at Deak College, and the feedback we received was very positive. Also, Senior Project is starting for our seniors as our final quarter starts on April 11th, and then MCAS is also coming for our 10th graders.
And then Best Buddies Prom was held last Friday, which included a promenade, dancing, food, and an all-around fun time, and it was held at the Franklin Elks, so it was an amazing time for everyone who was involved there.
Also, our student gov is working to organize the color run for Mr. K, which will be held on May 19th, and it costs $35 per person, and they raise money for the scholarship in Mr. K's name.
I just had a question about your sense overall of how the walkout went. Did you feel that it met your expectations? And
I think for me personally, it exceeded my expectations.
Yeah.
There was a huge amount of support.
Yeah.
There were people, the people who organized it spoke. There was a moment of silence, and I felt it was really, really respectful and well.
I especially appreciated how they took a moment to recognize why we were having the walkout.
Yeah.
So not everyone who was there just felt like they were just getting out of class.
Yes.
They personally, and even standing with the crowd, you felt like everyone who was there knew why we were there, and they had a purpose for being where they were.
One final question on each. I was just curious about the whole idea of student participation. Do you see this carrying on in terms of young people registering to vote and understanding the power of their voices out there in a democracy? Do you get that sense that this is going to carry over and not just be a
one-day? They actually had handouts saying how you can register to vote and other ways you can help. And so I think that really made it possible for the plan to keep going forward.
Was anyone participating, or have you heard other students that meant to participate this Saturday? I know there's a big march sort of around the state. I know there's Worcester in Boston. Mm-hmm.
I've heard a few students are going to the one. I think there's one in Boston.
Yeah. But that's good.
Any other questions?
Oh, I'd like to say thank you for the Science Night. Not you, but the students and the staff. And I spoke to Mr. Perry. Every year it gets bigger and bigger, and there are more people. It's fantastic. There isn't a parking space to be had, which is fabulous. So thank you.
My family had a wonderful time at Science Night. I was very impressed with the quality of what you guys were showing and really getting it at a level for the little kids. It was great.
Thank you. And if you need to leave because you want to go study, thank you. Superintendent's report?
Sure, I've got several things for you tonight. First, I want to update you on the concession stand proposal and where we are with that. Just to remind you and the community, on December 12th at the regular school committee meeting, you voted to approve this community project for a new concession stand at Franklin High School, which was presented at that time by Mr. Mike Sochi, pending my verification of sufficient funding. Last week, we held a follow-up meeting about the concession stand to learn more about the progress of the fundraising and to determine if enough progress is to proceed forward. I'm pleased to report that they have secured $122,000 approximately in donated labor, about $33,000 of donated materials, and a cash donation nearing $19,000. And all told, this amounts to approximately $175,000, leaving them with about $37,000 remaining to fundraise. which is awesome.
That's great.
But a quick turnaround. I know they've been doing a tremendous amount of work and outreach to the community. As of that meeting date, they also had a plan to close that gap to secure additional donors of labor, materials, and cash. So given the magnitude of these very generous donations, I feel comfortable moving forward with the project and proceeding to the next phase. We have a follow-up meeting next week to walk the site to develop a project plan, which will include demolition as well as construction as they outlined in their initial proposal. So basically, we are at the point of putting together a much more detailed project plan for demolition and construction going forward. Up until this point, and I want to thank these folks, Mike D'Angelo, Director of Facilities, Miriam Goodman, Business Administrator, Peter Light, Assistant Superintendent, and Tom Angelo, Athletic Director, have been those that have been most active in participating in these initial planning meetings. We're expanding our team to include the principals now that we're getting closer to having this come to fruition, to bring Mr. Perry, Ms. Motti, Ms. Peretz, and Ms. Kelly into the discussion as this is located near the Oak Forest Man and ECDC complex, and also obviously has an impact and influence at the high school. So I want to make sure I send my thanks and gratitude to the donors who are committing so generously to this project. We are so very excited that a new concession stand with bathroom facilities looks like it will come to fruition for the fall season.
Great.
I'll continue to keep you informed as things progress. I want to commend, this is about our food service program. I'd like to commend Colin Boisvert, Director of Food Services, Suzanne Sharon, the Assistant Director, all of our cafeteria staff, as well as Miriam Goodman, for their hard work in preparing for the recent Department of Education's audit of our food service program. The reviewer noted that she was pleased with the operations and there were minimal findings. Our program was commended for eligibility determination for free and reduced lunch, citing that the process is excellent, with no errors in the 328 applications that they reviewed. Meal patterns are compliant. We are serving food that meets the guidelines. There are good communications in place and staff knows what they are doing. And there is, and I will attest to this, a fantastic catering program.
We know. Yes.
Colin provides a lot of our materials for different events that we hold at the district level and at the schools. The findings, which they did find, the minimal findings that they found have already been corrected through a corrective action plan and included cannot use a single digit code to identify free and reduced lunch status. The annual public release needs to include free eligibility guidelines and a categorical listing of other programs. And water needs to be available in the cafeterias. And so they've worked with facilities to make that happen. Again, I'd like to extend accolades and thanks to our food services department for an excellent audit with the Department of Ed. It's a lot of work to put that together. And we got very good remarks. The third thing that I wanted to share with the community is that Jefferson Elementary School received a special grant. Sarah Klim applied for and received a 2018 Bridge Builder Program grant from the Martin Richard Foundation for the Jefferson Elementary School. This is going to appear as an action item in the consent agenda at your next meeting. However, I wanted to take this opportunity to highlight it. The award is for $500 to fund a community service project. The goal of the foundation is to foster projects that foster inclusion, equality, understanding, and trust in the community. For their project, this grant will support paint and painting supplies to create murals in the school hallways. This was a student-generated idea. She met with the entire fifth grade, presented the opportunity to them, asked them to come up with ideas for projects, and after a few weeks, they gathered all the ideas. Students voted, and the idea for murals was the winner. Students will work in small groups to either choose quotes about kindness, respect, and being inclusive, or they will design pictures along those same themes. And then this spring, they'll work in the groups to paint the murals across the building. So congratulations to them at Jefferson for that award. I too wanted to know Family Science Night. As a former science teacher, it was right up my alley and I couldn't think of anything more fun to go to. But it was a total blast. The advisors and the members of the FHS Science Honor Society did a fantastic job setting up activities and demonstrations in the area of biology, chemistry, physics, computer science, and environmental science around the theme of aliens and space. And there were many, many families, and you heard tonight how packed it was. I think everybody did a great job sharing how fun science can be. And the last thing that I wanted to note, because it's, I think, a really exciting time as we plan for the 18-19 school year. We've had some kindergarten welcoming events, and we had our Leaping into K annual program on Monday, March 12th. Kelty Kelly hosted the event, and we had numerous parents there despite the inclement weather that was forecast for the following day. Within the Mercer Auditorium, Kelty created a really welcoming environment, and it was very, very informative answering parents' questions. They heard presentations from two principals, two kindergarten teachers, as well as Ms. Debbie Dixon for student services and Miriam Goodman about food services and transportation. The next step in welcoming the class of 2031 will be, I'll pause for a moment, will be presentations at each of the local elementary schools later this spring.
Okay. Any questions? Now we move to guest presentations, Project 351.
So Brendan O'Leary is going to come up to the front table to share a little bit more with you about his early experiences with Project 351 and what he's looking forward to through the spring and early fall. By way of background, Project 351 is a statewide youth-driven service organization. It was started by Governor Deval Patrick. And there are eighth grade ambassadors from each of the 351 cities and towns in the Commonwealth. Here in Franklin, we have a representative from each of our middle schools, and we rotate every year. And this year, our representative is from Annie Sullivan. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Brendan to share a little bit more about what's happening.
Hello. As you know, I am Brendan O'Leary. I am an eighth grader from Annie Sullivan Middle School. And during this time, I will discuss what Project 351 is. I will explain my spring project for Cradles to Crayons, and I will answer any questions you may have. What is Project 351? In 2011, Project 351 was conceived as a one-day event for Governor Deval Patrick's second inauguration. More than 400 eighth graders representing each city and town in the Commonwealth joined together to serve, develop leadership skills, and discuss issues critical to young people and their communities. Project 351 was inspired by an unwavering belief that young people lead in a powerful and transformative way in every community in Massachusetts. And when united, they are an unstoppable force for kindness, community strength, and a more united and engaged Commonwealth. Project 351 is an innovative, statewide youth-driven service organization that unites an eighth grade ambassador from each of the 351 cities and towns in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts for a year of leadership development, enrichment, and impact. Through unique service opportunities, ambassadors gain valuable skills, create positive change in communities, build a statewide network of value-aligned peers, and unite the Commonwealth in a common purpose. Earlier this fall, we gathered for an inauguration and a fall project. At that project, we gathered at the JFK Library and created care packages for Cradles to Crayon. We also collected gloves for families displaced by the hurricane in Puerto Rico. So for my spring project, I will be doing a clothing drive for Cradles to Crayons. And Cradles to Crayon is an organization that helps kids in need over Massachusetts. It's from ages 0 to 14. And they just look out to help those kids. So during this project, I will be collecting used clothing, and I will also be collecting new pajamas, new socks, and new undergarments. So 368,000 children in Massachusetts live in low-income or homeless situations. At Cradles to Crayons, their entire organization is driven by a focus and all-important goal, to make life better for children in need. To make this happen, it takes a wide variety of individuals and groups coming together to make a difference in their local communities. I am very glad and gracious to be able to help with this cause. I would like to thank Ms. Wyckoff and all the other teachers that nominated me for this. I am very grateful and am pleased to help with this work. What questions do you guys have?
I have a question.
All right.
The clothing drive, is there kind of a date framework for it so we can kind of get that information out, that start to finish, when you'll be doing it?
Yeah, so at school, it will be, we'll have a one-day drop-off on Tuesday, April 2nd from 3 to 4 p.m. But there will also be a drop-off section space at my house at 16 Cribbery Drive from March 26th to April 4th. And yeah, I will be collecting clothes there. And the students at Annie Sullivan will drop off clothes at that date on April 2nd.
Excellent. Good. Any other questions that people have?
Yeah.
So with the project, does everything go directly to, where is the main chapter?
So, Project 351?
Yes.
So, there's no like real main spot. Like throughout the year, we'll be like meeting at different places. So, earlier we met at JFK Library, but later I think we're gonna meet at the State House, I believe. And yeah, so there's no real main section for that.
I wonder if you mean the Cradles for Crayons too, and what families they're serving and what areas?
Yes, that's what I meant. So
oh, yeah.
If say there were families in Franklin that may need that, is there like a process? Do you get involved in any of that, or you're involved with gathering all the supplies?
So yeah, I'm in charge of like gathering supplies, and then there'll be like a regional drop-off section where everyone like in this part of Massachusetts will drop their clothes off, and they will then ship that off to a factory, Cradles of Crayons in Boston. And then their volunteers help organize the clothes and anything else that's been donated. And there'll be like packages that have been created, and they will then ship them off to people who have made requests. And, yeah.
Very good. Excellent.
Yeah.
So just to get a sense of what this project is like, I'd love to have Brendan describe the day that they all went into Boston, because it's so courageous, and that eighth grade students get on. I'm you know what, I'm going to stop and I'm going to let you explain how you come to meet with the other students from all the other communities.
Okay, so it was early in the morning. All the everyone got dropped off at like a regional spot, and we all. Every ambassador hopped on a bus, no parents, and with a bunch of all these new people, we drove to Boston, and yeah, we met at the JFK Library, we connected with other people, and everyone was super nice. It was awesome.
But you're right, that's scary when you have to, it does take
I mean, his parents dropped him off at this one location, he's picked up from a, you know, by a bus, and gets on with a bus full of strangers.
That's true. Any other questions? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes, you really, again, repeating what I said, but just a wonderful reflection on your parents and the school. And thank you, and your parents, for coming.
Mr. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for raising, you know, a nice kid like this. Good work.
Bless you.
We'll keep them.
Yeah. If you want to, you don't need to stay. If you wanted to leave, we don't want, if you want to stay for the rest of the meeting, or... We
have two other kids at home, so we will.
Yeah.
Two other boys that we're raising nicely.
Yes. Unless we leave them alone. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That applies to his principal.
That does. And our next presentation is an update on homework reviews. Dr. Joyce Edwards is coming.
Dr. Edwards is getting set up. I'll set the stage for her update on homework. An update as it relates to the district improvement plan. We had an update regarding social and emotional learning a couple meetings ago. We split up the second goal of the district improvement plan into two different presentations because of the, I think the content is so rich. And so in this first presentation, Dr. Edwards is going to give you and the community an update on and activities that are happening with the K-12 homework committee as we examine homework practices across the district in light of the school district's new policy, the school committee policy that went into effect earlier in the year. And with that, I will turn it over to Joyce.
Thank you. I'm hoping the PowerPoint comes up soon too. That will definitely enhance things just a little bit. Okay, what now? I need friends. It's a good thing I have friends.
Okay, Peter, it's all you.
We just happen to have Dan Chase in the back of the room, too. We need him.
It's all you.
Like I said, I need friends. Thank you.
HDMI.
Do you know how many times I've told him he can't leave? Just for this reason. No others. In any event, thanks for having me tonight to talk about homework, everyone's probably most favorite and scintillating subject. So for an agenda tonight, I wanted to start with acknowledging the policy change that came about last spring through the school committee, starting with the budget, the policy subcommittee coming up to the full school committee, and we'll talk a little bit more about that and how it does relate and how it helped generate part of the district improvement plan. And then I'll talk a little bit about the homework study group, how it was formed and the work that we've done to date, what we've studied, what we've learned, and assessing our current practices, which is where we are now, and then moving on to some next steps as well. As you know, we've piloted some vacations this year, December and February so far, homework free, and I've got some data to share with you about those as well. So the policy change and the link to the actual policy is at the bottom of this slide. However, some of the highlights, I kind of cut and pasted some of the words that seemed particularly meaningful in terms of the policy that you now have adopted. The school committee's emphasis was on the needs of whole families and on the whole child and on families. As you thought about the policy and the changes that needed to occur to be contemporary and relevant in today's world with regard to homework. So some of the things that that the policy identifies is that homework should be appropriate in both time and frequency for the developmental stage of a child. It should be meaningful, relevant, and aligned with the work in a classroom. It needs a clearly articulated purpose, educational objective, and learning expectations. It should be personalized to meet the needs of the learner. It should be structured so that it provides students with feedback so that we generate improved learning as a result of that. And that it's consistent to a reasonable degree across grade levels and among classrooms. And that it's aligned with current research on best practice as well as with our school and district policies. So this is a sort of a summation and a recap of the policy that the school committee adopted last spring. That then generated a piece of the district improvement plan that was developed over the summer, and late August, I'd say, was when we pretty much had finalized that. So this piece of the homework piece goes to strategic objective number two, ensuring that all students are supported and challenged to reach their full potential. And when we talk about aligned curriculum, best instructional practices, and varied assessment opportunities to personalize learning and meet the needs of students. That more specifically ended up playing out in a strategic objective that charged us with creating an educator and administrator study group to examine research and the best practices with regard to homework and make recommendations for K-12 homework practices, and so that the practices would align with the Franklin School Committee policy. And further, we talked about having developing a presentation and a forum for parents and guardians regarding possible changes to homework practices grounded in research and best practices in the field. So that's what the school, the district improvement plan looks like. And then what I wanted to do is talk you through a little bit of the work that we've done as a homework study group. Right now, the homework study group members are about 26 people, including myself. It's a cross-section of teachers from and administrators from schools, grades, and departments. So teachers across levels, we have 5 elementary teachers, 4 middle school teachers, 6 high school teachers, 1 special educator, 1 English language learner teacher, 1 elementary literacy specialist, 1 middle school subject coordinator, happens to be science, and 1 high school department head, happens to be math. We also have administrators. We have two elementary, one middle school, one high school, and one from central office representing special education. I think it's really important to note that people who volunteered for this committee came from a really wide range of beliefs and practices. So these weren't just people who were necessarily interested in homework reform. In some cases, they might be people who were interested in not having any change to the homework practices as they had existed in our schools. So this cross-section of beliefs really has generated really fruitful and rich discussion over the course of our meetings. So we determined early on that some of our planned outcomes as a group were to develop some recommendations regarding homework practices, and specifically so that they would align with the school committee policy. And we wanted to make sure that we gathered parent and student voice as a part of this process. The teachers were already a part of the process as part of the study group, as are the administrators. And I think of this as sort of an accordion. So in terms of the teacher piece, as we do our work, we'll go out to the wider teacher community and come back in to the study group, and we'll go out and come back as we refine and continue to revise our work. And then similarly, this will happen a little bit further down the road as we talk about it with both families and students as well. One of the things we want to make sure as an outcome is that we review the school committee policy to ensure a match all the way around between practice and policy. And the school committee was very open to the fact that we might need to revise pieces of the policy or suggest policy revisions if, in fact, the practices that are suggested don't align. One of the things that we did early on in the study group was we really took a look at the policy and went into it with an open mind. As we did our work, I charged the group with coming back to revisions of the policy that would reflect the practices and beliefs that people on the group might have and the group might have. And in the end, at this moment, as a group, the 26 people have decided that the policy as it stands accurately represents research and the beliefs of the consensus of the 26 people. I'm not sure that in our first meeting I saw that coming, I will be honest. But after some really open-minded study and looking at some of the research, we've become more like-minded perhaps as a group. But it really speaks to the work that we have to do within the greater community of all of our stakeholders as well. One of the things that we want as a planned outcome is to have that parent forum. I'm thinking probably in the fall at this point about the research and the practices so that it would be more of an educational evening as well as the proposed changes that we might be making at that point in time. We're looking at coming back to you with an update on this now. We can certainly come back to look at that policy again later this spring. And it's a multi-year process, so I would say at the end, a year from now, at the end of the next academic year, the work of developing recommendations should be fairly well complete, and we can once again come back and really compare it to the policy and make sure that the alignment is actually there as intended. Initially, as a group, we discussed why were we forming a group. At the very first meeting, someone very very respectfully and appropriately asked, you know, why are we, I signed up for this, but why are we here? Like, what's broken and what are we trying to fix? And it's a really reasonable question. Homework has been around for not just decades, but hundreds of years. And there are some foregone conclusions we think about homework that we think are the reasons why we do have assign homework, why we have kids do homework, why parents monitor homework, why teachers expect homework. And what we determined was that we really needed to understand if those sort of foregone conclusions and prior beliefs and knowledge really were borne out in the research. So we set the purpose of the group as a study group intentionally, and we used as our primary text a text that actually I had shared with the school committee when we were working on the policy probably over a year ago now, right? So it's called Rethinking Homework by Kathy Lederode. And then there's another book that we came across called No More Mindless Homework, and I mean dozens and dozens of articles as well. Sort of pro and con, you're really in favor of homework, not in favor of homework, somewhere in the middle. And so it was really something to go through all of the research and really take a hard look at what is being said in the field and what the research, in terms of research-based practices, what emanates from that research in terms of being good practice. So as a group, we decided we really needed to study. We did some research. We did some thinking about homework for all grades. And again, this is a K-12 group. So asking a high school teacher who doesn't perhaps have a second grader at home either to think about what homework looks like in second grade is a really different lens. Similarly, asking second and third grade teachers perhaps to look at something from a middle school or a high school lens is again a different way of looking at it, because your policy needs to be a K-12 policy, but our practices are different and need to be, in some cases, grade level specific, but certainly more level specific, be it high school, middle school, and perhaps early elementary and intermediate elementary. So there's a difference between policy and practice, and we really had to, as a group, wrap our heads around that. So we have this policy that's overarching and for the K-12, but what does that actually look like for a typical fourth grader in one school versus another classroom next door or in another school across town? So one of the things that we talked about was our own personal beliefs and that of our colleagues. I did a belief exercise with folks at one of our meetings and really tried to flesh out what those preconceived notions were. Some of the things that came up are beliefs that would not surprise you, that we have to prepare kids for the next level. So if in high school they're going to get 4 hours of homework, in eighth grade we need to give them 3 hours of homework. Well, those are arbitrary numbers, really, in fact, and the research doesn't necessarily support arbitrary numbers in terms of the amount of homework that should be given. But do we want kids to be ready for the next level? Of course. Is homework the way to do that? In some cases, it may be, but not always. One of the things we really want for our students is to use critical thinking skills, problem-solving skills, be able to manage time, have study skills, be able to do all of the what we used to consider softer skills to be able to manage their academic lives. And now what we know is that those things are critically important and they're pivotal to academic success. So we really had to sort out our own personal beliefs about what, in fact, was grounded in research and what was just a tradition, something that we did because we grew up with it, perhaps, and we do what we know as educators. I think we do that a lot as parents as well. But we do what we know, and is that just because it was done to me, does that make it effective and relevant today? So we really went about it with an open mind, and I think the committee, the study group, really came at it with respectful but interactions that really spoke to their differences as initially, and really you would hear people kind of come through a piece of literature and kind of come to a place where they said, oh, I hadn't thought about it that way. And you were hearing these kinds of comments around the room. So it was one of those aha moments as an educator that you always kind of look for, is that people are trying on a different lens and looking at it differently. So right now where we are is we're looking at identifying the current practices in Franklin. I posed the question at our last meeting prior to the one that got canceled for snow. Yeah, one. I posed the question, so what do you think we are doing in every third grade, every sixth grade, every freshman English class? And every teacher in the room thought they knew, but what they realized was they only knew what they did. And for the principals in the room, and actually Paul is on the committee as well, for the principals in the room, they only knew what happened in their school or in the part of the school that they were most familiar with, if they were a subject supervisor, department head. So the math department head could talk all day long about what was going on in math homework practices, had no idea what was necessarily going on in science, social studies, or English, so therefore didn't have a comprehensive picture of what that looked like for a student. Which is really ultimately our focus. So right now, we decided that if we really can't identify what the current practices are, and none of the 26 people in this room can really speak articulately to what they are, then we need to develop some surveys and get some information. So that's where we are now, is we're in survey development, and we're looking at surveying teachers and possibly students as well to get some sense of what are our current practices. And a number of people in the group, and actually in the homework surveys too, I can address this as well, have talked about how their homework practices have changed over the last 3 to 5 years that they are no longer assigning as much, or they're assigning it differently, or they're having a different expectation for outcome. So it's been interesting to see how teachers have also evolved practice, and some of the student input was really interesting too in all the comments that were submitted. So our next step, like I said, is to develop some surveys to secure some input. We hope to complete that through the end of this school year and be able to come back in the fall ready to tackle our next steps. So our next steps would be to develop some preliminary recommendations for any proposed change to practice. And I think one of the key things that we're looking for there is some consistency, and that came through loud and clear in the parent forums that we did last year as part of the policy subcommittee work. There were some parent forums. We also talked a lot about, you know, how do we maintain for teachers that art and craft of teaching? So if this particular class doesn't need this assignment today because they've mastered that, do we have to give them something else because we said we were going to give 20 minutes of homework? And is that then busy work? Is it meaningful? Is it, or do we just say to the kids, here's 20 minutes, go read, go play with a friend, you know, to use that downtime. We talk on one hand about social and emotional learning and the needs of our students and that high anxiety level. But if we're giving meaningless homework or irrelevant homework, are we contributing to that by default just for the sake of hitting a number of minutes? So those are the kinds of things that we've been grappling with and will continue to. So the preliminary recommendations would be for proposed changes to practice, and again, would be looking for input from a wide variety of all of our stakeholders in that accordion kind of process. So we would be looking for teacher and student feedback, as well as families, as well as your feedback. And we're going to come back to school committee sometime next year in order to ensure that the policy and practices align. And is it the practices that might need to be, tweaked, or is it the policy that needs to be tweaked? And it, you know, that should be a pretty good discussion, I would think, as well. We're really looking for it to be reasonable. I think that's really one of the other things that came through loud and clear in the policy development, was a sense of consistency, but also reasonability, and understanding that families today don't always lend the same kind of support to their learners across the board. Not all students have the advantages, and how do we look at this from an equitable standpoint, as well as looking at product as well. So it's not just about output of homework, but who's able to produce that homework and under what conditions, and who do we put at a disadvantage as well. So we want to look at the equity as in addition. So as I said, we had done some surveys. Next steps. I'm sorry, I skipped that slide. So next steps also were to do the family forums like I talked about. It's a multi-year process. We'll extend into next year. And then I think over a period of time, perhaps in the succeeding year or two or three, we will want to cycle back in a timely review of any changes that we make in order to ensure that they're effective. So let's say we come up with some proposed changes by the end of next year for the following year. That would be the 19-20 school year. Sometime at the end of 2020, we want to go back and take a look and make sure that the changes that we proposed and implemented actually did what we thought they were intended to do. So we'll cycle back into some sort of timely review of the changes. So we did do, we piloted a homework-free vacation in December. That was our first experience with that. And we surveyed a number of stakeholders after the vacation. We waited deliberately after the vacation. We came back on January 2nd, and we purposely didn't send the survey out for until a few more days afterwards, so that the thinking here was, and actually I think this was Dr. Hearn's idea, was to make sure that we captured, if we had said no homework, did the kids get sort of swamped in the first few days of that first week back? So we waited and distributed the survey more towards the end of that week so that we would capture that sense if in fact it occurred. We left the survey open about 10 days. And out of all of our families, we have about 3,400 students K-8, and we got 560 responses from families. So, we're talking 3,400 students and far fewer families. We have about 136 responses from teachers, again, K-8. We have about 300 teachers, I'd say, at that level. Over 1,000 responses from middle school students. We have 1,300 middle school students, so that was a really high response rate, largely because the middle schools put the kids in front of a Chromebook and said, okay, here, do the survey. So the fact that we're missing 300 is kind of baffling to me, but you know, whatever. And out of the FHS families, again, about 1,800 students there, far fewer families, 268 responses. About 150 staff there, so 69 responses on this, on teachers and staff. And again, 1,800 students and 447 responses on the homework. What we found, and I personally have read every single comment for every survey, the overwhelmingly positive response from all of our stakeholders was really significant. The large majority endorsed continuing vacation as home free, continuing vacation as homework free. And the population that had the most concern about losing time, not being able not to use homework to advance curriculum, was the high school teachers, and almost 70% of them also endorsed homework free vacations. So even though they were the population who was most concerned relative to everyone else, almost 70% of them still were in favor of a homework-free vacation. So that's fairly compelling as well, at least for those who responded to the survey. We went through the same exercise again after the February vacation, and we'll do it again for April, by the way. That was our commitment to the pilot program. We sent out the surveys again 3 to 5 days after the kids came back. We left it open for about 10 days. Survey responses were fairly similar, but what I think was striking was that the data really followed the similar themes, patterns, and trends as the December vacation surveys. Many families wrote extensive paragraphs about that vacation became less stressful and that it allowed students to relax. And many students wrote many teachers, students, and families all wrote thank you to the district for taking this approach. And I saw that many, many times in the comments. The high school teachers legitimately have the most concern about homework and vacations, especially our teachers who are teaching our AP courses. They're trying to teach a college level course. We've now had 5 snow days. The date of the test does not move. And so looking at how to advance that learning and take time off is a disconnect. But teachers who weren't teaching AP classes were really very supportive of this. I think come April, the survey results will be yet again probably similar K-8, and I would guess that the stress level at the high school with regard to April vacation will probably surface again. We phrased the high school that it should be homework free to the extent possible, again leaving that up to the discretion of the teacher. So a lot of families did respond that it was inconsistent, that some teachers gave homework and some didn't, but that might depend on whether one was an honors class versus an AP class. It also might depend on a number of families. I did hear this in a very limited way. I would say it was less than 10 total responses on either of the sets of surveys. There were a number of families who said that we should have given homework because it would give the kids something to do over vacation. or they would spend less time on their phones or playing video games or whatever. But those were, they were represented in the comments, and so, full disclosure, but they were a significant minority among the comments. So again, we will do this again for April. I think that the complexity of the high school for students as learners, as well as for teachers as teachers, it really makes it tough to be able to be 100% equitable, although many teachers have indicated that they don't give homework or big projects over vacation periods anyway. But then you'd have another family who would say, my entire daughter's vacation was consumed with this project. So I don't know that we're going to hit a perfect solution for the high school. And when we've said to the extent possible, that would like it to be homework free and be mindful of reducing the stress and anxiety,
and workloads for students during this period of time. Many families pointed out that when adults take vacation from work, you're not expected to create massive projects, you know, while you're home or while you're on a beach. And so why should it be different for students? And many, many families spoke to that in the narrative comments that I heard, that I read. So I am happy to answer any questions that, you might all have.
Some of the conversations I remember from the policy subcommittee, which it, the homework issue coming into there really stemmed from a lot of our community coffees and hearing about inconsistencies. So I appreciate that your surveys and focus has been on vacation-free, you know, homework-free vacations. But two other areas that we heard about were projects that were being asked to be done at home and even weekend homework.
Right.
So are you looking at those? Like, how are you capturing that?
Right. No, that's a good question. And it's actually the day-to-day, night-to-night homework, too, that in addition to the two areas that you mentioned. And that'll be all part of the survey that we try to capture our current practices from teachers and from students, as well as looking at that day-to-day homework. So is there an expectation for reading for every second grader? Is there an expectation for written output every single night from every fourth grader? Is there an expectation for all 8th grade social studies students to complete a project, some of which is done at home? So we'll be looking at that. And the idea of the weekend homework, again, same thing, that there are teachers who certainly do assign homework over the weekend, routine homework, and there are teachers who do not regularly as a matter of practice, and some only do if it's necessary, like sometimes when you've had a snow day and you have to be able to complete a unit. Sometimes, you know, there's a perceived necessity, and really looking at that. So one of the things we need to do first, I think, is capture what we actually are doing and to what degree. So it's not just that one teacher isn't giving any homework and everyone else is, but to what degree is that true? I think a lot of people hear things on the soccer fields and in the dance studios and around town, and I think where our job is to look at it in a more quantitative way and be able to sort of pinpoint to what degree homework is or is not consistent across the district right now, and then be able to develop some recommendations from that. And keeping in mind, of course, the policy. I think the homework-free vacations has given us a big window into the perceptions of families. Some of the comments were quite specific and really, I thought, poignant and meaningful. So some of that data might also be used to be able to inform some thinking about recommendations about weekends or projects. I know one of the things you heard was that the projects at home, especially for elementary kids, became parent projects, and parents had already completed fifth grade. Didn't necessarily need to do it again.
Went through elementary school all over.
Right, right. And you know, so those are those kinds of things that, you know, we definitely heard as part of the work that, you know, you all had done at the policy level. We want to really pull that apart at the practice level as well.
And I think that's really interesting that you said that, you know, bringing this, you know, group of 26 together. Yeah. You realize, like, that's a, like such a revelation to realize that you don't even know what's going on. I mean, it's just, it's so complex.
Right.
So, I mean, it's clearly a challenge, and, you know, but initially I was, like, bristling at, like, how long it's going to take to go through this process, because as a parent of a middle schooler, it's painful, but I think, you know, the whole Franklin is going to be better for it at the other side.
I think it's probably more important to do it well than to do it quickly.
Absolutely. I do have one other question.
Sure.
I'm just curious what the questions that were posed to the students were, because you did have nice response rates on those surveys, and how those questions might have differed. I mean, I know I answered the parents.
Right,
today.
Right.
I'm just curious.
I can certainly share those out with you, but it was you followed the same kind of format. Did you have homework over the vacation? How did having homework, K-8, we pretty much expected for them not to have homework, so we phrased the question as, how did not having homework over the vacation period impact family time?
or impact your vacation with your family. And the kids were pretty articulate, of course, about being able to spend time reading a book they enjoyed or use it, you know, being able to travel, or how difficult it would have been because they were traveling to have to take the Chromebook and be able to, you know, be online and do the work. So our middle school students were very articulate, and our high school students were more mixed because some of them, of course, did have homework as well. But the questions were really very similar. You know, how did it impact your vacation? Would you recommend continuing a policy, a practice of not having homework over vacations? And that was a pretty uniformly resounding yes, you know, from the students to not have homework over vacations. That was not a really big surprise. That was not a really big surprise. I think I would have been shocked if it had gone the other way. But we certainly felt like we needed to ask the question and not just assume anything.
I just have one last question. So our next update from you on this issue will be in the fall?
I think it makes sense to be in the fall before we, and to work with you, hopefully, to be able to do that parent forum with proposed recommendations. I would expect as we start to come back to do those recommendations, we'll probably simultaneously start planning for that forum to be maybe November-ish, December-ish, and then be able to take all that data and come back, and we'll probably have to revise some of the initial recommendations and tweak them or reword them, and then be able to come back in the spring with something that looks pretty final.
Are these policies online? Because I tried to look for them and I couldn't find them. So is it only going to parents that have students?
The surveys?
The surveys.
The surveys only went to parents,
it would be,
families.
I think someone would like to know what the content was.
Sure,
I
can share
take
those.
It. Yep. I just would like to see
yeah,
them.
Sure.
I would just like to love to see them. What the questions are you asking any of the surveys?
Sure.
Would you send them to
oh,
us?
Oh, sure.
Thank
yep.
you.
Yeah, easily done.
I dug around. I said, it's going to be here somewhere. I'm
well, yeah, no, the way, no, they're actually sent out through Regroup
okay.
to our typical
so
lists for families
right, yeah.
or for teachers. Or, so, yes, but we certainly, I'll certainly show them.
Thank you.
I just wanted to commend you. Seems like a very thorough process and a lot of work, but I was really glad to hear that it's research and evidence-based,
mm-hmm.
that you're considering equity, I think
mm-hmm.
that's really important. And also when you mentioned the critical thinking skills and problem solving and time management coming from higher ed, like that's what they need
right.
to get to us. So making sure that that stays as a big focus, I think that's excellent. I have a super naive question.
Okay.
How are you defining homework? And by that I mean like is general study time included in that? So if they're preparing for an exam, is that part of homework or is it just things that they turn in? Or like how is that?
Good question. So first of all, I want to just go back to your higher ed comment. Anecdotally, one of the things that we have heard repeatedly from Franklin High students who come back to us is that they have been incredibly well prepared for college, and we've heard that for a number of years. But we certainly believe that the time management and how to chunk a project and have interim deadlines are learned skills. So, you know, I'm glad that you said that because that is certainly something that all of our teachers really work to make sure that students master. And then, you know, as to the other part, what is actually homework is a really, that's been a topic of conversation also. What we did when we talked about homework-free vacations is we were fairly clear that reading for and with and to your child is not homework necessarily, but is encouraged on a daily basis, especially for our elementary learners, but that doesn't really count as homework. Homework we typically have thought of as something that required a written output, but one of those other pieces that ties back to the study skill piece, as we're examining grading practices also, the more you want to open the door for students to be able to retake an exam perhaps that they didn't do well on, I used to say to my own kids, I prefer if you know all the material on the day of the test the first time, but sometimes they don't know what they don't know until they take the test. Now you know what you don't know, and now you have to study. So we're talking with teachers and have been for years about active study and proof of study.
Mm-hmm.
So that, in other words, if a student's going to be allowed to take a retest for a higher grade, that their homework is to provide a proof of study. So perhaps now they've made some flashcards, they spent time with a teacher, they took advantage of a peer tutor at the high school, or you know, some sort of active proof of study. That to me also counts as homework, as well as an essay that needs to be rewritten to be published. So typically it's written output, but it doesn't have to be exclusively. The JESCO study, I think, is a frustrating thing in today's world, because I don't know that that is clear to a student what that means. And so we all, I think if we did a poll of the room, JESCO study, we probably all would approach the same task somewhat differently. And part of this is making the right match for that student in terms of effective study. And are you studying for rote memorization, or are you studying, you know, we always say if it's Googleable, what, you know, is it really worth it? I mean, you know, so really studying for to be able to apply knowledge, that's a different kind of exercise in terms of both homework and in the classroom.
So you're going to capture that in terms of the time expectations?
Right. At the youngest levels, it's generally produced as a time expectation. And at the higher levels, at the upper levels, middle school and high school, it's generally product driven.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a question?
I do. And Dr. Edwards, thank you for putting this together. Like everybody said, it's really good to see that when we started this, we're already here.
Right.
And just curious, when the students came back after their homework-free breaks, did the teachers happen to say that students came back refreshed, ready to learn, eager?
Right.
Or just like, oh, really? Here we are, we're back again.
Right. There were a number of comments on those surveys that referred to that. Some teachers really talked about students coming back refreshed. I did see that in the comments. I also saw that students, while they came back refreshed, weren't necessarily current. But one teacher also added, but they're not always current the next day, even though, you know, like from Monday to Tuesday. But good teaching practice is to come in and start the next day with a quick review of what was current, what was most last done anyway. And so I think teachers did need to be more conscious of that, perhaps, to activate a little bit of that. In a conscious and deliberate way, but the comments about students coming back refreshed were definitely in the surveys.
Good, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Gigi, go ahead.
Yeah. No, you go ahead. A couple things. One, just want to mention the critical thinking, the time management stuff. Not only is it great for the higher ed, but someone in corporate, it's a great foundation early because they need those things later.
Right.
So if they build it and then do it in higher ed, and then when they get to whatever job they get to,
right?
So that means a lot. I was also curious about the middle school students as a middle school parent, because I did have a middle school student who had work on February vacation. And so just curious if you got any comments. I don't know if she filled it out or not.
Right.
But I was
there
just
were a
curious.
Few. There were a few who said that, and what I wasn't sure about is if they were long-term projects that just happened to have a deadline, perhaps not the day after vacation,
right.
But spanned vacation. And so I wasn't sure, honestly, as I read them, how to interpret that. But we, you know, we did ask K-8 teachers to honor that, and we went one step further and also asked them to honor it themselves and take the week off, and not spend their week lesson planning and everything else, because again, we can't pay attention to the social emotional needs of our students if we don't provide self care. If we don't give ourselves self-care as educators.
Yeah, also. Not necessarily anything wrong, and it may have been her just trying to get ahead.
Right.
She had some things to do.
Right.
But also thinking about those that might be from a special ed perspective or IEP, if they're behind and they feel like they have to catch up. So how do we kind of help that population with this idea of not having homework over vacation?
Right. I think that's a really good question, and I think to some extent that's going to come down to the individual learner. So students who will benefit from having that sort of constant repetition or reading at least 10 or 15 minutes or whatever it is, I think that's a conversation then that a teacher needs to have with a family and say, gee, if you can help support your student and not think of it as homework, but think of it as supporting your student for 10 days while before they come back to school so that there's not regression, that perhaps that's a one-on-one kind of conversation.
Mm-hmm. I just had one thing I was thinking about it, and boy, I know it isn't an easy way to look at it, but you mentioned social emotional learning, mm-hmm. and then you look at the group that consistently puts the most pressure on themselves is that highest performing
Absolutely.
Group. The group that most needs time away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but the feeling that they have to have, and because, you know, all you have to look at kind of the data about what's happening to these kids and this, the level of anxiety and depression mm-hmm. that particularly that at-risk, high-performing group, you know,
sure.
and I know that's something clearly you're wrestling with, but mm-hmm. it's just something, you know, that as you were talking.
And I think as we've just come through the course recommendation season and selection, course selection, you know, selecting courses for next year, I think it's really important for families to be mindful of how many AP courses and honors courses that their students are taking, because it's driven by the course load as well as
yeah.
the individual students' makeup and how they respond to that. But perhaps six APs is not the best choice for every student.
And if they can learn that now, because I'll tell you, you made a comment about when they, mm-hmm. you know, get to work. I know most of the people I work with are doing work when they take vacations with their
right.
families.
Right, well.
They're not taking that downtime.
I was going to hold up my phone, but it's
a
mouse instead.
Early, can you help apply it
right.
and actually take that break? Because we all need it.
We do, and I think it's really hard for us. I'm finding, like everyone else, that I have to consciously try to unplug and be mindful of unplugging and being present. And it's no different for our students either.
But just that point you just made, though, about the number of AP courses, I think I really was glad you brought that up, just because I think young people tend to believe that because it's so competitive, they want to get into the right college, they have to take 27 AP courses. But what it does to them, you know,
right.
and the toll it takes, it's just, I'm glad you brought that up. That's it. I don't know. Any other questions or people want to know? Thank you, Joyce.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Joyce. Discussion action items? First on the discussion action items are two policies coming to you at a second reading, and I recommend adoption of the following policies as discussed, policy CPD, superintendent's contract, and policy ABF, the wellness policy.
Is there a motion to recommend adoption of the following policy to adopt?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Opposed? No.
Second in the area of discussion action items is a proposal from Franklin High School, and in your packet is a memo from Mr. Perry. Mr. Perry and Mr. Clements are here. If there are any questions with respect to this proposal, there is, in terms of an action, I'm seeking a temporary suspension of one of your policies, JH, which has to do with student attendance, and you have another policy, BGF, which allows for a temporary suspension of policies such as this for the purpose of Franklin High School seniors who are in good standing during quarter four to receive a perk, which they've outlined as allowed to arrive late to school if they have a first block study during that rotation, or to leave just after fourth period at 1 o'clock if they have a directed study last period. It is something that I am in support of, and I'm asking for the ability to suspend policy JH to allow this to go forward this year for quarter four on a pilot basis.
Does anyone have any questions before we?
Yeah.
I can ask questions.
Yeah.
So. It would be every day. It's only two out of every 7 days.
I'm gonna let Mr. Perry and Mr. Clements, who have so kindly come tonight.
Yes.
I don't want their attendance to be for naught. I want them to be able to answer your question a little more specifically.
So with our rotating schedule, you know, the course of 7 days, there's a double drop. So they would this would only match up for a student twice over those 7 days. It would only be for their direct study that they have first period in the morning or last period in the day. And that would only happen two times over the course of 7 days.
So they would be able to come in late once and
yes.
leave early once.
Yes. Okay.
I'm just saying, I had this early release when I was
right.
in high school. school.
Right.
And I actually went to my corporate job.
Yeah.
And I made great money at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, right? Like, so I think there's a huge benefit for, you know, well-standing seniors.
Yes.
But you can't schedule that if it's
right.
on and this very weird interval.
This, to us, we look at this as the first piece in a sort of discovery process. The seniors at Franklin High School for years have really not had many perks at all, and I've been doing some research and talking to other high school principals, and they have a long list of perks. The way our schedule works, we really had to do it fourth quarter because of time on learning and what Mass Department of Education says we have to have, and this would be maybe one of the only ways that it fits. We felt it was a great way to keep seniors with us right up to the end there, and on top of that, it helps with them some sleeping in, and we talk about the importance of sleep and all that stuff, and then also the jobs in the afternoons. And then there's also a selfish component for us at the building, which is alleviates traffic in the mornings and the afternoons, and parking issues, which are things that we're dealing with each and every day. And it sort of seemed like one of those everyone wins to an extent, and those are some of the fun proposals to put forward. And we thought that this was a great opportunity with a wonderful senior class, who has helped with the proposal and helped with a bunch of other things, and has had some really wonderful behaviors. We felt this was a great opportunity and a great time of year to put this forward, to pilot it, to see how it might work for the future.
So it's the, you know, 450 students in 12th grade who are in, so it's a subset of them. I'm assuming it doesn't apply to everybody.
It doesn't, right.
And then, so for, let's say, you know, 50% of those,
right.
they would all be able to come in late
yes.
on that one. So it would be 200 kids coming in late on X day
yes.
and 200 leaving early.
Yeah, along those lines, yeah. Maybe even less numbers.
But just the way that breaks down, you probably take those 200 kids and divide them by 7. And I'm not going to try to do that math in my head publicly at the moment. But it would be fewer than 200 at any given time. It would probably be, have those 200 spread out.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You need, like, a PhD for that spreadsheet. So that schedule like guys, too. So I'm a little worried about trying to figure that out in 2 years for my talk.
Any other questions? Diane?
You said it's a pilot,
yes.
and you said fourth term because of the time on learning.
Correct.
But if it goes to a regular policy,
yeah.
would it be able to be on here?
No, we wouldn't be able to meet the requirements of time on learning. And so, yeah, we'd have to look at that. Now, at the same time, we're going to be looking at the high school schedule in general as a group of community members and students and staff members just to explore it. You know, sometimes when this one's been in effect, I think, 5 years now. And you sort of look around and you say, is this the best fit for our needs? So those two things may work together, you know.
Because the only thing I'm thinking of is a lot of students, if they do the senior project, they're
yeah.
not mm-hmm. there anyway.
That's true.
So it's not, I'm not trying to
no.
criticize,
no,
but
no, no,
it's
no.
not much of a perk
yeah.
if you're not there.
Could
you make it, it would be nice to have it earlier. That's all I'm saying.
Absolutely. No, we agree with you 100%. But for those 90 students doing senior project, they've got something very special going
right.
on as well. So
right.
it's sort of a...
But the ones left behind could be like in AP or whatever,
yes.
give them a chance to leave.
Yes.
Could they leave even earlier if they have more
platforms?
No.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Good. We're working on the pilot stuff. Right. This was step one, so...
All right.
No,
I'm just
sure.
thinking,
yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Trying to watch emails.
And so are we. I think that's really
no,
cool.
No,
so,
I understand.
If it works out with time, and another thing that Warren's mentioning, and I'd like to talk about a public, where we have been here and we have talked about some concerns in the past with chemical health and, you know, student drinking and drug use and things like that. I don't want to jinx anything, but our senior class has led a very positive year of great decisions, and this is another reason why we look forward to
dating back to last year,
mm-hmm.
the junior prom and things like that, where it was incident free. So
correct.
And this is a group that has truly sat beside us
mm-hmm.
or pulled us along for
mm-hmm.
some leadership type things between gowns and
yeah.
walkout and other things. So we had a very funny moment as high school principals where we presented to the students that we were going to be with school committee last Tuesday to present this and to propose this. And there was a loud cheer
yes.
in the audience. And we said, but you do need to be in good academic and behavioral standing.
Yeah.
And there was an audible, oh. And they were having fun with it. It was a cute moment.
But also to play on that front, there are times as we head into fourth quarter, there will be some students who owe detention hours for whatever reason, and there's always a little bit of a cat and mouse game trying to catch them. And this is something that it puts more of the ownership back on the students a little bit earlier in the year, as opposed to we're heading into senior week or senior banquet, and it's one more carrot to encourage a level of responsibility on their end as well.
Is there a motion to recommend temporary suspension of policy JH?
There was a motion.
Yes. Okay.
There was a second.
And all those in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And our students, thank you as well.
Start times advisory committee appointment.
At the February 27th meeting, when you appointed members to the school start times, I was still in the process of finalizing a high school member, and so I bring a name forward for the final appointment to the school start times advisory committee and ask that you appoint Elizabeth Wolfline, Franklin High School teacher, to the full committee this evening.
Okay. Is there a motion to recommend?
Motion to accept.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
DECA trip.
So I'm pleased to share with you that DECA, who traveled to Boston March 8th, 9th, and 10th, had two students qualify to go to the the national competition. And they have a proposal forward to you to travel to Atlanta, Georgia, from Saturday, April 21st through Wednesday, April 25th for the International DECA competition. I do want to apologize in the supporting documentation. It was in Anaheim last year, so I want to clarify that it is in Atlanta, Georgia this year. And I'm asking for the school committee's approval of the request of Franklin High School to take the DECA students to Atlanta April 21st through April 25th for the International DECA competition as detailed.
Is there a motion to recommend approval? Is this just two students?
Two students and one advisor would attend.
We have a motion. Is there a second? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Thank you.
In your packet, there is a field trip approval request for the New England Institute of Technology trip where some students would be going to the New England Institute of Technology to expose them to a variety of post-secondary options and careers. There is no cost to students. It is not an overnight trip, but because it's out of state, it's coming before you for your approval. I recommend approval of this request to take FHS students to the New England Institute of Technology in East Greenwich, Rhode Island on April 27th.
Is there a motion for motion to approve? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you. Budget discussion, and actually for the purposes of budget discussion, Sarah, you're going to kind of review the critical needs that are going to be addressed in the budget.
We're going to actually move over to the projector. It feels like it's been forever. I think it's been almost over 3 weeks. But the last time we presented on the budget, we presented what we called the superintendent's recommended budget, and I'll just sort of recap that for you very quickly, and then talk about some of the, Ian will talk about some of the discussion at the budget subcommittee meetings that we've held. So we included the superintendent's recommended budget in the packet again.
Seriously.
Seriously. We might need some training on
that. I'm telling you.
I need to write the list. Projectors for idiots. Leave it for me.
Try just playing the
beginning. Eight flight.
There we go.
Yay. Yay. We have a technological event. Superintendent. That's awesome.
So I'm just going to show a couple of slides just to reframe the conversation. When we came to you on February 27th, these were the budget assumptions that we were operating with. Preliminary increase in the allocation from the town of $3.2 million. We were budgeting based on a health insurance rate increase of 8%, 3% increase for our contractual obligations, a 5% increase on out-of-district tuition rate, and a 3% increase for transportation, also knowing that we would have about $2.7 million less in revolving funds to apply towards the FY19 budget. I shared with you what level service would look like, as well as discussing how some critical needs areas were incorporated into the budget to come up with these final numbers. The recommended budget being $64,390,935, which is level service, plus also meeting the critical needs in basically three areas. Some additions to our social and emotional learning program through a counselor review, a DESA assessment, which would assess students' skills in social and emotional learning and allow us to see where students are in their development, as well as additional professional development through the William James College. We had talked about two programs through special education. One would be a peers-only class at ECDC, which would be a revenue-generating classroom for some additional preschool students, as well as a NEC partner program through the New England Center for Children, which would serve between 3 and 5 students at Parmenter and would be modeled after the NEC program, but allow us to have that those services right here within our home community. And then some increases in special ed staffing, namely 1.3 professional staff kind of distributed across multiple areas, and 6 education support personnel. So that would that's what would be folded in along with level service for this recommended budget. Miriam had talked about the revolving account offsets and how in FY18 we had budgeted for $6.3 million in revolving funds to be used, and that the superintendent's recommended budget was looking at $3.6 million for revolving fund use, which is a reduction of that $2.7 million, which is listed in red. When the revolving funds are taken into account and expenses are totaled, the increase isn't really a 6.9% increase in the budget. It's really more of at that time, February 27th, a 2.18% increase. And so in summary, when we last presented, we had a budget gap of $935,000 to close at that time. We still had some variables that were under consideration, including the actual allocation that we expected to receive from the town, the actual health insurance rate increase that we could expect, any potential circuit breaker supplement from the state, and our remaining FY18 expenditures. Some of these are still variables. And the proposal was to reduce the gap with additional revolving funds as needed. This then went to the budget subcommittee. The budget subcommittee has met twice since February 27th, first on March 8th, and more recently yesterday, March 21st, so that we could come to you this evening for the budget discussion. And this slide, which was not in the original presentation, has been prepared to kind of summarize the conversation of the budget subcommittee. And with that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Bergen.
Because I think this is important to point out, and of course we know I'm not really an expert in any of this, but just to clarify, is that just to maintain the level service budget and then just add a few, address a few critical needs, that still left a gap of $955,000 approximately. To make that up, money will come from the circuit breaker, from $300,000 from transportation to pay the ride, $300,000 from the pre-K revolving account, and then any money from retirements or vacancies that should surface. So that will close that gap to get us to where we need to be, our bottom line. I don't know if there's any, if anyone has any questions on that, if I was clearly explaining it, or if Miriam wants to add anything to what I just said.
I would just add the additional reduction in the healthcare costs. We went in, as Dr. Hearn just told you, with the assumption of an 8% increase in healthcare. That increase in healthcare is better reflected at a 4% increase at this point. However, the allocation that we believe we might be seeing in terms of an increased allocation from the town has decreased by that same roughly $200,000 at this point, because the town is also facing a gap in closing their budget. So that's where we are to be able to support that as well, with the reduced cost of healthcare, which I would also commend the IEC, the Insurance Advisory Council, that has been meeting for the past couple of months talking about healthcare and proposed plan design changes. The original quote for our healthcare provider from our existing healthcare provider came in at close to 13.8%. And we all recognize that that is really not sustainable for any of us and for this town and the budget. And so by working together as an insurance advisory council, we've managed to bring that down to some plan design changes, potentially switching carrier and, or likely switching carrier, and then a 3.5% to 4% increase.
Anyone have any questions?
Thank you. So next steps from here, we have a budget subcommittee meeting. We'll probably update us during that. I'm sorry. Stay tuned for next steps.
No, actually, if you say the next steps, that would be great.
Okay, the next steps. We've got a budget subcommittee meeting on Monday, and we've been actively preparing for the budget hearing, which is coming before you at the next school committee meeting on March 27th. And budget books will be published publicly tomorrow. The school committee has received budget books in advance to take a look at. They'll be published publicly tomorrow in advance of the budget hearing, which has been advertised. The snow has made this a little bit of a less linear process than I think we had planned and would have liked, but we are still working towards that.
Thank you for all your work and the views.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A lot of work that you've done next to those numbers.
Miriam's done a wonderful
Thank you. Information matters. We can move along. I'll just very, very quickly, because Sarah has already said everything about the budget subcommittee. But
she stole your thunder.
Just one other thing that was brought up at the, which I thought was a really good question, just to do a little research, because we look at the percentage of the budget that goes to salaries, I think it's about 76%. Mm-hmm. And then the question was raised at the budget subcommittee is, how does that compare to other towns? Are we in the same ballpark? So then Sarah and Mary were going to do some research and get that information. I thought that was a really good question that was raised. So, and our next meeting is on Monday at 7 o'clock. We'll go from there. Okay. Community relations, Gigi.
Yeah, so love the snow. It's had a lot of fun on everything that we're trying to do. So we were meant to have a community relations coffee around school budget, but of course we kind of got interrupted. So what we're going to do is at our next community coffee, which is April 4th at 6:30 at the Franklin TV studio, is we're going to combine and have budget and elementary school as two topics. Right. If we need to go a little longer, I've been told I have an in and we can stay a little longer at the TV studio, need be. Although it's not as linear as you said, Sarah, it will still give an opportunity after the public hearing. If people have further questions, they can still come talk to a couple representatives of the school committee around the school budget, and then also any conversation around elementary school, and of course any other questions anybody has, right, feel free to do that. We are going to have our next kind of planning meeting for our subcommittee that same day, just before we have the community coffee. So that'll be April 4th at 6 o'clock. We'll kind of make sure we've got our plans in place, and then we'll have our community coffee.
Sounds good. Thank you. Any questions on that? No? All set? Policy? MJ, anything? Looks like
there's always something.
I know.
Always.
At policy group.
You guys. Yeah. We met on the 6th. No issue with snow.
Because you guys have snow beads.
See?
Yeah.
See, there you go. What we talked about most was social media policy. that is being put together, and Peter and Sarah, we're going to have it sent out to legal, have it reviewed, and it will be coming back to us. And our next meeting is April 3rd. No need for a snow day.
Best laid plans, MJ.
Is that 7 o'clock?
Of course.
Oh, all righty, just checking. Excellent. Very, very good. Public schools advocacy.
Okay, thank you. We met on the 15th, and we have three items to summarize from that meeting. We're going forward with trying to plan our forum with Congressman Kennedy. So I'm playing email tag with his office, but we'll see him tomorrow. He's going to be in Franklin. So I'm hopefully going to pin him down on the date. So we're looking for that in the next month or two to have a discussion on federal policy level issues. I did send everybody an email today with some potential federal impacts on education. We also discussed the importance of having representation from Franklin and MASC's Day on the Hill. So I plan on attending on April 25th. If anyone wants to go with me, we can coordinate that getting into Boston, but I will be representing us and making those appointments with our legislators. And then lastly, one of the things that we felt it was important as a committee was trying to take some of the takeaways from our legislative forum and sort of the advocacy tone of what we're trying to accomplish and put something into our newsletter. So I'm going to get the newsletter out this weekend with a summary from each of the chairs of the subcommittee. And Anne has drafted a lovely message from the chair, kind of talking about the importance of public schools. And I'm excited for the community to see that. And we're waiting specifically for these budget links to go live tomorrow so that we can link to all of the budget information. So we'll send out maybe Monday morning on regroup our newsletter to the school community as another reminder of the important budget hearing on Tuesday. And capture what we've all been working so hard on. So
that's great. Thank you. That's great. Ad hoc superintendent's evaluation committee. I just wanted to remind people that Dorothy Presser from MASC is going to be here on April 2nd at 7 o'clock in the training room just to do kind of a workshop on to make sure that we're really on board and follow the process correctly. And after that, Cindy, Diane, and I will meet as a committee and just see what the next steps are after we have that meeting. Then joint PCC, Cindy and I met the joint PCCs on March 5th. One of the things we talked about that surfaced, it was right after the Parkland shooting incident, and parents raised questions about perhaps having some kind of a presentation at school committee about just an update, something, what's happening with school safety, maybe bring some representatives from the police here. We can ask questions, reassure the public that we're kind of on top of things. So Sarah was fully on board with, working to get something set up for one of our future presentations. Cindy, was there anything else we're continuing to work on? Just getting the data to make sure that there's consistency around the enrichment opportunities at all the schools. I think that was pretty much it, right? Yes. Okay. And then substance use task force, I guess we're going to be meeting again next Tuesday, right? And again, just to reiterate the power of this committee, because it's really looking at substance use at the school level, what we can do, what we can be doing at the school level to really address this whole issue around substance use disorder at the family level and the community level, and how we can all work together, planning programs, creating educational materials, and partnering with the SAFE Coalition to do some public outreach. It's really a powerful committee under Peter Light's leadership, and it's really going well. Anything I left out off you? Peter? Okay. SWAC, School Wellness Advisory?
It was canceled due to snow, but Peter, as an assistant superintendent and the previous one, have always built in extra meetings, monthly meetings, so that we meet, I suppose, so we're good.
Oh, okay.
So we meet in May.
Okay, so meet in May. And I just wanted to say, to commend Miriam Goodman and also Kristen Latender, who attended the Reach Out to Youth and Families function at Patriot Place for the Hockmock Area Wise. It's such an important partnership with our community and the fact that you represented, you were there, and it was pretty powerful, wasn't it, that great presentation? Yeah, and they do a lot of grant writing and working with the schools, and even just opening up during the power outage, the Y, so people could come in, and even if you weren't members, and use the facilities. It's just a gem in the community that I just wanted to, you know, say thank you there. And I think that covers all of that.
Did you want to do a school start?
Oh,
that's great.
It's right here in front of me. Go. Oh, I'm sorry. Monica, Gigi, and MJ are on the school start times. But I asked Monica if she would be the one who would kind of at the meetings talk about it. Monica?
We met on Tuesday, the 20th. It was the first meeting of the committee. It's a large group, so we started with introductions. And there were, I think, almost all of the 20 members were there, and four of the support students. And then Dr. Ahern led us on to, in a neutral way, come up with the pros and cons, or potential pros and cons of changing the school start time, which led to us identifying the big themes that we need to work on, and led to the creation of subcommittees. Mm-hmm. So the next step will be people selecting what subcommittees they want to work on and getting assigned to those subcommittees. And then we planned for the next steering committee meeting to be on April 3rd at 6:30 p.m., right before the policy meeting. And then the next full meeting of the committee will be on May 2nd at 7 p.m.
Any questions on that?
No, I thought it was minutes online somewhere that we can find.
Not yet. We do have minutes, but they're not yet posted. But I'd be happy to send out a link once they are.
Good, thank you.
You're welcome.
Good. Anything else? Did I miss anybody else? Sorry, Monica. I had it all written out too. Sorry. Oh, MASC, thank you. I knew that. I
talked about the subject, but I don't think we had a meeting. But I wanted to talk about the summit on poverty. I don't think we've met as a group, so
yeah.
I'm just going to reiterate what I think I've said in subcommittee conversations. I attended the summit on poverty, and Dr. Ahern was there presenting, and it was, you know, it's always sort of an inspiring and humbling and sort of, you know, thought-provoking day. Sarah missed our morning presentation, which was William Parrott, but she gave this wonderful presentation in which she quoted, unknowingly, William Parrott. So we bought this book, Disrupting Poverty, and we're gonna do a little reading. There's a lot of interesting exercises that he brought forth, talking about fees and equity and things like that, which I think, as we know that we're going down some sort of tougher budget issues in the future, that would be maybe good work to do in a workshop at some point to talk about equity and things like that. But it was Sarah did a wonderful job representing Franklin, and it was a really empowering day.
If I can just jump in for 1 second, we ordered a couple extra copies
yes.
of the book
yeah.
Disrupting Poverty, so if you're interested in reading it, just shoot Denise or me an email and we'll get you a copy.
Any new business, anything for future agenda items that you wanted to mention, Sarah, that we bring?
I can just run down March.
Wishful thinking.
March 27th's agenda, in terms of what will be coming before you, we will have the FY19 budget hearing, and in terms of discussion action items, a vote related to public school choice, as well as a vote regarding the school committee meeting schedule for the 2018-19 school year. And a couple, kind of typical items in the consent agenda.
MJ reminded me that perhaps it's in order just to say congratulations to Peter Light, appointment of superintendent in the Acton-Boxborough School District. So we're gonna miss you very much, but we're proud of you and we're not surprised. So
thank you.
Now let's move to the consent agenda.
Okay, I will read these. If you want me to hold anything, please just say hold. I recommend approval of the minutes from the February 27th, 2018 school committee meeting.
So moved.
No, we do the whole thing.
I recommend acceptance of four checks totaling $518.67 as detailed. $340.72 from the Parmenter PCC for supplemental supplies. $50 from a Parmenter parent for supplemental supplies. $77.95 from the Parmenter PCC for supplemental supplies, and $50 from a Parmenter parent for supplemental supplies. I recommend acceptance of $240 from the Franklin Music Parents for in-house enrichment as detailed. I recommend acceptance of a check for $5,000 from the Digital Federal Credit Union for a FHS scholarship. I recommend acceptance of a check for $1,000 from the Davis Thayer PCC for library books. I recommend acceptance of a check for $594 from the Remington Middle School PCC for in-house enrichment. I recommend acceptance of a check for $4,159 from the Jefferson PCC for field trips. I recommend approval of the request to take the Horace Mann Middle School 6th grade students to Save the Bay in Providence, Rhode Island on May 30th, May 31st, and June 1st, approximately 52 students each day as detailed. And I recommend acceptance of a check of $3,805 from the Keller PCC for field trips.
Is there a motion to approve the
motion
consent
to approve
agenda?
All consent agendas?
Second. All those in favor?
Question.
Oh, okay, sure.
Another question. Just a comment about all of the donations. Without the help of all of these organizations,
PCCs.
The PCCs, Digital Federal Credit Union, all of them, these kids would not be doing what they're doing.
Yes.
Very much appreciated.
Takes a village. Absolutely. So, all those in favor of the consent agenda?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Very good. And I believe that is looked at payment of bills. They looked in order, reviewed all of those. Cindy, payroll?
I reviewed the payroll from the March 13th.
Okay. And as I mentioned, we don't need executive session. So is there a motion to adjourn at this time?
Motion.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? If you like this, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is entitled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.